Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey everyone, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show. And we are going to mix it up. We're going to do something a little bit differently today. Instead of having a guest on, we've decided to mix it up and we're going to take a short pause, probably about 4 weeks, from me interviewing guests because, well, look, I'm going to be honest. It's the holidays. It's the end of the year. We're super busy and it takes a lot of time, including my time, to book a guest and read their book or do the research and interview them. And I love it. But remember, this LeadX Leadership Show is a labor of love. We spend a lot of time and money on it. We don't make any money on it. We don't have any sponsors. And so sometimes we just got to do the day job and spend time with our family and get ready for the holidays. So instead of doing what we sometimes do, which is sort of do a best of, bring back one of our, I don't know, over 300 episodes now, we thought, hey, we also do our awesome webinar series. Now, this is where usually one of our more popular guests will get a full 45 minutes to an hour to present from slides. We usually have about 150 to 200 people as a live audience so that they can interact with them. And I thought, wow, wouldn't that be great to offer this up to our podcast audience? True, you won't be able to see the slides, but you get one of our best guests for a full hour. Instead of me cutting them down to 20 minutes, instead of me hogging half of their time, instead of it just being a teaser for their book, you get to dive deeply into their topic. And today we have Chris Besch, who is the founder and CEO of Choose People. I've raved about her several times on this show. Again, we've got 300 episodes and she's absolutely one of my favorite people. Just so much energy and enthusiasm. And she's going to talk about the 8 keys to happy employees. Now, before I turn it over to Chris, I was going to say, look, if you haven't already left a review for LeadX on iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher, and yes, I said Spotify, we are now available on Spotify. So all of you who are tuning into tunes on Spotify, maybe on your phone, don't forget, just search up LeadX, L-E-A-D-X, and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify. So leave a review, subscribe on Spotify, and it's going to help us to spread the word. So having said that, I will talk to you on the Friday show. But for now, here's Chris Besch.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Vanya Mathis, webinar co-presenter at LeadX, and I'm so excited to bring you our host, Chris Besch, CEO and founder of Choose People, a company that transforms company cultures, increases employee happiness, and boosts the bottom line. On today's webinar, Chris is going to show you the bottom line business case and ROI of happy employees, 8 critical factors to employee happiness, and 7 ways you can create and keep happy employees. A few quick things before we start. Please be sure to close out all other programs and browser windows as they can eat up your bandwidth. You can use the chat function to talk with attendees and hosts, which is located on the right side of your screen on the bottom. And then you can use the Q&A function on the bottom middle of your screen to submit questions for Chris, who will answer them all after her presentation. Please welcome Chris Besch.
Thank you so much for having me, Vanya. Really appreciate being here. Thank you all for attending. I'm going to jump in because there is a lot of content that I want to cover and share with you all today. And again, way to show up. But first and foremost, we are going to literally cover how to make your employees happy and your company rich. So let's go ahead and jump in. First and foremost, I always kind of like to start off with what I consider a little bit of a litmus test. Like if you think about your team and you think about the people that work for you and maybe you're not in management yet, I imagine you probably are, but if you're not yet, if you even just think about your coworkers and you think, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how unhappy or happy is your team? Now, feel free to, you know, if you want to, and I can't see it, right, but if you want to answer this in the comments, that would be fantastic. Now, some of you might be like, that's a little bit too open kimono for me. And so, one of the things I would offer up is that go ahead and write your number down, right? Just write it down. Because here's what I've seen in my experience is that when I speak to CEOs, when I speak to deans, when I speak to business owners, executive directors. It's interesting how about 80% of the time, the answer that I receive is 7. And 7 is an interesting number because, right, it seems like it's better than average. But usually 7 means either like, well, we're good, but we're not extraordinary, right? Like we're not off the hook. People aren't clamoring to work here. It can also mean like, gosh, Chris, like, I don't really know. Like, I'm not sure. Now, usually I'll have about, I'd say 10% of my audience, even 15% of my audience that will say that they're less than 7. And that usually, unless it's with my super analytical types, that usually means there's a couple of challenges. There's a couple of challenges, you know, culture challenges in the space that you're trying to address and figure out. And then if you said 8 or more, and assuming that you're not delusional and that you're fully in touch with your team, from a litmus test standpoint, chances are you probably have a pretty good culture. So it's just an interesting place to kind of start and consider like, huh, where do I think from a happiness standpoint, do I think my team is at? And this is something that you literally can go around to your team. Now, again, if people are candid with you, right, how would they answer this? Hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy or unhappy are you with working in this organization? And I want to specifically speak to this word happiness, because reasonably, I tend to get some pushback, right? I tend to get this like, well, Chris, I'm not responsible for making my team happy. And the thing is that I absolutely agree. You can't make someone happy. However, if you are in a leadership role or a management role, you are responsible for creating an empowering context within which people can be happy. And so there's a piece there where a lot, you know, we've heard for years about employee satisfaction, we've heard about employee engagement. And the thing that I really want you to consider is that satisfaction is an incredibly low, low bar. And then on the engagement side, like viscerally, we don't know what engagement looks like, but I can tell you personally, and I can see it when someone's happy, right? We can feel it in our bodies. We see it on faces. There's crinkles right at the corner of our eyes as compared to like the flat smile of like, yeah, I'm doing great. Like we know the difference between when someone's happy and when they're not. And so there's a piece there where I also offer up, you know, when you ask people like, hey, and this is if you have kids, right? What do you want for your kids? Often they'll say, you know, I want them to grow up to be happy. And that happy piece, it is, it's a viscerally emotional, whereas engagement, it's kind of this intangible, like, what does that really mean? And I would actually suggest that people can be both engaged and unhappy. So we'll come back to this a little bit more as we keep going. All right. I want to give you just a little bit of my background. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time here, but I think it is pertinent. And that is before I started Choose People, which I started in 2010. Prior to that, I used to run a moving company of all things. And in that moving company, it was incredibly toxic and we were really financially struggling. So we were trying to figure out like how to cover payroll. And people were literally yelling obscenities at each other and not in that like, yo, yo, we're tight. But like, I'm going to take you out back and show you where the sun doesn't shine. It was really, really intense. It was a really tough time. And quite honestly, I was new to the leadership role. It was one of those where, and I also didn't know much about moving. For any of you who knows, you know, even just an inkling, I didn't know what a tractor trailer was. I was like, a tractor, like, does that go on a farm? So just for all intents and purposes, I was fairly clueless. And I reached out to mentors. I read books. I attended things like you're attending today to try to figure out like, wow, we got to get this solved and we've got to get solved fast because I don't have time and I don't have money. Like I can't just like throw money at this problem. And out of the beautiful skies of epiphanies that things sometimes kind of beautifully shine down, I just had this really just tremendous clarity where I was like, okay, a lot of companies focus on money. They focus on their financial health, their financial sustainability, and they have to, because if you don't have financial health, you don't have a company, right? Like it is really, really hard to have it keep operating and focusing on your mission and those sorts of things. But as you and I both know, right, we can manipulate those numbers all day long in our Excel sheet and maybe have something more advanced in which we're, you know, but the numbers don't create the numbers. Right? The people do. And so then you look at like, okay, our customers, like what about, you know, repeat referral, word of mouth, customer satisfaction, which again, I hope you're going for customer joy. But there's a piece there where like, okay, well, great, but who's taking care of our customers? And for us, right, my crew guys were the ones taking the piano at the switchback staircase, not me. And so I was like, okay, if my crew feels good about coming to work, they'll take good care of my customers, who in turn will take care of the financial health of the company. And I worked that. And this was back before culture was even a term. So this is back in like 2003, and culture was not terminology. And so I was like, okay, if I focus on the employee experience, if I focus on having my crew feel good about coming to work, the way they show up to my customers and the way they do their work will then feed into our financial productivity, our financial success. And that's what happened. So literally within the course of a year, we went to where we could not cover payroll, to where we had 40% less turnover than the industry average and a bottom line twice that same average. And I was blown away because it wasn't about throwing money at people, because again, I didn't have any money to throw at people and be like, oh, like here's the cool, you know, tornado slide, here's the CrossFit gym, here, right? Like I didn't have that stuff. And I really, again, focused on that employee experience. And again, we're gonna talk a little bit more about that today. And this is a really simple model, but I can't tell you the amount of clarity it provided me in the moment, because again, I was trying to figure out like, where do I spend my energies as far as strategy to get us to financial health? And I focused on the employee experience. Now, because I had such an amazing experience with the moving company, and again, this was back before culture was even a topic, I was like, gosh, why aren't more organizations focusing on this? Like, this is incredibly valuable. And like, so long story short, I ended up doing a year's worth of research with the Industrial Organizational Psychology Department at Colorado State University, over 1,000 hours. And what came out of that work is the diagnostic that's part of our culture audit. But what that diagnostic measures is these 8 factors, right? So these are the 8 factors that go into having your employees feel good about coming to work. And what you'll notice on these 8 factors is that the first 2 really have to do with the relationships that people have with one another, right? Relationship with the supervisor, relationship with their coworkers. The next 3 have to do with their relationship to the work itself, right? Does it feel like it's a good fit for their strengths, right? Do they have a sense of autonomy? Do they feel like their role has an impact? And then the next 3 really have to do with their relationship with the organization, right? Do their values match that of the organization's? Do they feel like there's they're supported by the organization? And then work family climate. And one of the things I want you to know about these 8, and you know, I don't have you guys in a big old conference setting where, you know, I could be like, hey, what do you notice that's not on this list? And we hear about it and yet we forget about it, right? Money is not on this list. Compensation is not on this list. Benefits is not on this list. Perks are not on this list. And those are all the things that I notice that when companies are trying to improve their culture, the first thing that occurs to them is, well, can we give everyone a raise? Can we improve benefits? Are there some perks that we could offer? Right? Those tend to be where we go to first. And it's not even that it's like the easy answer. It just seems like the obvious one, but it's not in the top 8 factors. And one of the things I can tell you is that of all the work that I've done, there's only been one company in my 8 years of doing this work that I was like, you know what, you just need to give everyone a dollar raise. It was retail, they were going down the street for 25 cents. And I'm like, just from a financial perspective, like that doesn't even make sense. So that's the only time I've ever recommended an increase in compensation. And so just next time you're like noticing there's some grumblings or some frustrations, that might be your temptation, that might be your go-to, but don't, like, that's not, you're wasting your time, right? Because it's not gonna fix it. The other thing I want to point out about these 8 factors is that they're all equally weighted, which is actually pretty fascinating. So Gallup, who has done extensive, amazing research, would tell you that bar none, the most important factor of these 8 is the relationship with the supervisor, that employees leave supervisors, they don't leave organizations. But there was another professor out of Harvard, and she said, bar none, the most important factor is that people have to feel like their work is meaningful. And that they're making an impact. And actually there was just a new study that came out just literally in the past couple of days that said, no, it's the relationships with the people. And we at Choose People, we say yes, yes, and yes. And like they're all, and it's not that all eight badgers are equally important to each person. Like I might be the person that's like, if you micromanage me, I will take you out, right? Like autonomy is incredibly important to me. Or I might be the person who's like, listen, if I take my kid to a doctor's appointment and I come back to the office, I don't want to get the stink eye, you know, that I'm not carrying my weight. Like I want to be supported in that effort. So for me, it's work, family, climate. So again, all eight are equally weighted for having an extraordinary workplace culture, but there might be different priorities for different people on your team. The last thing I want to point out on this is that in our diagnostic, when we're measuring these eight factors, the first seven are all based off of my experience and how I feel about things. The eighth, work family climate, is my perception not only of my own experience, but that of my coworkers, right? So if I feel like someone is being treated unfairly, that will significantly impact my experience of work family climate. So just something to take into consideration. All right. So I want you just to consider, there's a document on my website, super simple, choosepeople.com. And it's called 23 Elephants. And it's the top 23 culture challenges that I see within organizations. And it's a really kind of fun document, single page, to sit down with some of your colleagues and be like, huh, do any of these resonate? Right? Do any of the challenges that are on this sheet resonate for us? And the reason why you want to take a look at that is they're kind of grouped. They're grouped in terms of entitlement and apathy. They're grouped in terms of like drama, gossip. And then also, there's also some things around silos in there. And then there's also kind of just basic what I would call leadership conundrums. And so it might be a fun document to consider, but those tend to be some of the big topics, right? Where people are like, oh my gosh, we have so much drama, or we have so much gossip, or no one's really aware, you know, what the right hand's doing with the left hand, or we have two departments that hate each other's guts and don't get along. We got spitballs going over cubicles, or, we're actually incredibly close knit, so much so that we're so much dysfunctional and we have a lack of accountability, right? So there's so many different culture challenges that different organizations face, but those top 23 you can find on the website. And again, you can sit down with your cohorts and kind of go through those. All right. So for those of you, and again, I know in some ways I'm speaking to the choir because you chose to show up, but at the same token, part of what might have had you show up is like, make my company rich, like tell me more. Because one of the things that I hear around culture is like, oh, that's a nice to have. Or that seems like that fluffy kumbaya, like rainbows and unicorn stuff. Like someday, one day, like, yeah, we'll take a look at that, but it's really not mission critical. And here's what I really want to clarify as part of this whole experience today, is there is a huge, absolutely huge financial return on investment when you have happy employees, right? So you get at least 1.5 times much as, work out of your people. So here, consider this. If you have an employee who's making $40,000 a year, and again, if your average person makes $80,000, double it. If your average person makes $20,000 because they're part-time, then halves it, right? But if they're making $40,000 a year, if that employee is unhappy, they're unhappy, they will cost you at minimum, conservatively, an additional $39,000 a year to the bottom line. Now, if that same employee is happy, they will contribute an additional $21,000 to the bottom line. So that's a spread of about $60,000, or again, a 1.5 multiple of their salary, or in this case, you're looking at $230 a day difference. The reason why I bring this up is, again, I think there's this sense of like, huh, like is it really that important financially? And it is. It's absolutely mission critical. And I want you to know that kind of like, where do those numbers come from? And first and foremost, again, on our website, you can go there right now, download it. There's a document called the Financial Return on Investment of Happy Employees. And on the first page is the calculations that lead into those numbers. And then on the second page is all the research that supports those numbers, right? So it's not like I just pulled them out of my armpit, like tempting, but that's not how it happened. Like all the research backs up those numbers. So if you have someone on your team where you're like, well, Chris, I'm bought in, right? But maybe our CFO isn't, or maybe, you know, someone else on our team thinks it's not that mission critical. You literally can show them this document and be like, we're crazy not to be focusing on culture as something that's mission critical for our financial sustainability. And so again, here's kind of how the numbers add up. And you can see, right, lower turnover, easier recruitment, things that you're like, yeah, Chris, like I knew that. But now that you put it together with like all the numbers, that makes sense. But here's the piece that I didn't know until I did the research. And that is that happy employees make 26% fewer mistakes. 26%, which is incredible, right? And I would suggest it's not because your unhappy employees are like out to get you, right? I don't think they're, you know, trying to hurt you. They simply care less, right? So they don't put that attention to detail. They don't cross those eyes, or they don't dot those I's and cross those T's. And so, again, just something to take into consideration. There's also, in that same spot where you can download that document, there's actually a calculator, right, where you can say, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are employees? Plug in that number. What's our, you know, average salary? Plug in that number. Our number of employees? Plug in that number. And literally get a calculation of what's the current return on investment of your culture. Okay. The other thing I will say on that document, and this is something that I do share, there's one number in there that I don't, it is a made up number, and it's as conservative as I could get it. And that's the number around this brain drain on fellow employees. So we all know that when someone is disgruntled, when they're grumpy, when they're negative, when they're, frowny face, they impact other people. We do know, studies have shown that emotions are contagious. We just haven't been able to show how contagious and what the financial impact of that is. And so one of the numbers I have in there is like, okay, so if you have one person and they're impacting one, you know, they're impacting five of their teammates for 1 hour a week. And I would suggest it's bigger than that, but let's just, you know, again, be conservative with the numbers. And I always say, man, if you know of a study that has figured that out and you could pass it my way, I'd super appreciate it. So onward and upward. Okay. So I said I'd share with you, you know, the seven proven ways to create and keep happy employees. And I do want you to consider this picture of these doors. And the reason being is that, again, when you consider like what is culture, and you do think about like it's literally the air that your team breathes while running your marathon, right? It is the energy force field that they walk into when they walk into your organization. And I want you to consider for yourself, right? When you walk into your organization, you open the door, you walk in, what is that experience for you? Is it energizing, right? Does it bring vibrancy to you, right? Or is it, you know, does it kind of like suck the life out of you? Is, you know, are people, you know, moving around and there's a sense of vibrancy and kinetic energy, and or they're like super focused, or, you know, or is it, you know, again, we've been there. And the example that I like to give, you know, it's the difference between walking through the doors of Disney. And again, not that your culture has to be Disney, but walking through the doors of Disney versus walking through the doors of the DMV. Now, I do want to honor for those of you who are like, Chris, I work at the DMV. What's up with that? I will say it is significantly less soul-sucking than it used to be. Like, go DMV, way to rock it. And there's some history there. So consider that. What do people feel like when they walk through the kind of front doors of your organization? The other thing, all of these seven ways, right? So again, a lot of people have it that in order to have an extraordinary workplace culture, like, oh my gosh, we have to have the budget of Apple. We have to have the budget of Google. We have to have all these crazy cool benefits. We have to have this environment, this work environment that is just, you know, so innovative and so cool and so magical. And again, I would really push back. I had a moving company. There are very few industries that are less sexier than a moving company, right? And so it's one of those things where, again, you really have to consider, like, this isn't about It isn't about those perks. I mean, granted, if you can have natural light in your work environment, like make that happen, that's good for our mental health. But it really is looking at how do people feel in the context of working where they're at. And big picture, I want to share this with you. So again, I've been able to do this work now for, it's basically 7.5, 8 years. And culture has a lot of different pieces to it. There's a lot of different aspects that go into creating your culture. And what I can tell you is that if you get nothing else from this webinar, if you get nothing else from this workshop and your time spent here, I want you to walk away with these three pillars. Because what I found is while culture is kind of the secret sauce, the secret ingredient is emotional intimacy. And some of you might be like, oh, like, did she just say emotional intimacy? Like my HR person's going to freak. And so you can use a different term, which is, you know, close, not quite the same, but close is camaraderie, right? Where, and the way camaraderie is created and for each individual on your team is that they feel like they're known, that you care about them as an individual. You know about them as a person, they matter. Right? If they go above and beyond with their work, it matters. If they don't really show up at 100%, it matters if they slack, right? And then the third one is this sense of inclusion and sense of belonging. And everything that I share in my work when I'm working with teams tends to fall under one of these three pillars, if you will, of again, having your team feel like they're known, that they matter, and that they're included. And so next time you go to do your culture, you know, work on your culture, ask yourself, like, do our people feel this? Do they feel known by us? Do they feel like they're cared for and about? Do they feel like their work matters, that they make an impact? And do they feel included in that sense of belonging, kind of that shared identity? And you might say, well, Chris, if I give them a raise, they'll know that they matter, right? Going back to that whole, like, if we throw money at them, maybe that'll fix it, right? Again, back that bus up. Okay, so let's get into, like, these seven proven ways. And again, I could give you a whole bunch, but we just have time for seven, so we'll start there. So first and foremost, and this is so foundational that and it's also incredibly basic. So the other six ideas I'm going to share with you are ideas that you probably haven't really thought of or heard of. This is an idea that you probably have, right? This has to do with your mission. And you're like, really, Chris, do we really have to talk about mission? Like, Fork and I, like, I'm so sick of this. Like, I get it, like, the importance of why, blah, 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 right? You know, I get it. But here's the thing I really want you to get, and I'm just going to spend a little bit of time here, is because it is so foundational. And if you don't have it, it's really hard to build the rest of your culture. And so you want a goosebump-worthy mission, right? That really genuinely brings energy so that when I wake up in the morning and I'm going to work, I've got a real clear sense of why I'm choosing to work in this organization as compared to any other. And then it fills me with a sense of warmth that this is the work I'm doing, that this is what I'm up to in the world. Now, for those of you who might be nonprofits who are on the line, super easy for you, right? Piece of cake, you got this, right? We feed the homeless, we help education, right? Like, you're like done and done. But for those of you who might have a moving company, I just want you to know, like, so when I was doing orientation with my crew guys, and again, if you can imagine, if you thought bubble what a mover looks like, right? Like, there's some accuracy there, right? Like, there's some accuracy to that stereotype. And so I'd have this orientation with a little bit of rough-edged guys, right? And they'd be slouching, and they'd be like, oh my gosh, like, I gotta listen to this lady. Like, I just want to get a paycheck, like, get some hours in so I can get some money and get out of here, right? And there's this piece where your orientation is critical for setting the stage. And so where I would literally would tell these guys, like, yes, you are in charge of moving things from A to B in good condition. No doubt, that's what we do. But let me tell you why we do it. When people are moving, they're going through one of the most difficult transitions in their life. And I said, and you add divorce, you add death as a possibilities to that. And let's just say people are not on their best behavior. They are struggling. And so we'd talk a little bit more about this, and I'd be like, listen, at the end of the day, you truly are there to provide peace of mind all in one piece. Like, dun-dun-dun, right? But there was this piece where it was like really genuinely, like, it's, they would show up with empathy. They would show up with compassion to our customers because they would get that they weren't going to be on their best behavior. And what was so fascinating is after this orientation, you know, these young men, often young, not always, but often these young men would rise, and they would rise with like a peacock's boast. And they'd be like, you know, I'm a mover. Like, I help people through difficult transitions. And they did. And they got how important that was. They got that, you know, I'm putting all of this person's worldly possessions into my truck and I am driving away. And the amount of trust that that person is putting in me is enormous. And I just want to give you one other example on this, because I gave this presentation to a group of CEOs and I had a gentleman raise his hand. And he's like, Chris, that's all good. Like, that's nice. But let me tell you what we do. What we do is we create the rubber inner tube that goes inside tractor tires. And you know what, Chris? It's manufacturing. It's dirty. It smells. It's loud. He's like, it is not inspiring. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And I said, okay, I hear you. I hear you. But let me just clarify, right? So if your inner tube that goes inside the tractor tire doesn't have integrity, it's going to have a flat, I'm assuming. And he's like, well, yeah. And I said, so the tractor that's on is not going to work. And he said, well, yeah. And I said, I'm assuming most of those tractors are on farms. He said, yes. And I said, harvesting food. And he said, yes. And I said, that nourishes our nation. And he said, yes. And I said, so in essence, you help nourish our nation, right? And again, it took us a little bit to get there. But it's one of those where it's true. If it wasn't for the integrity of his inner tube tire, we couldn't harvest the food that's needed to feed people. And so really, I want you to get to that three, maybe five word clarity of what it is that your organization is up to in the world, that why piece. And you know, Simon Sinek has done this beautifully with his TED Talk. There's lots of great things, but nail it and make it goosebump worthy. All right, so I'm going to move on because you're like, all right, Chris, I got the mission thing. I'm on it. Okay. All right, number two, I really, really want you to create interdependency awareness. This is absolutely mission critical. If you have, let's say you have silos, right, where you have departments that aren't really connected, they don't know each other well, or they don't communicate well, or you've got a culture of comparison, where there's that sense of, you know, well, we work harder than they work, or my role is more important than their role, or I don't feel like my role is that big of a deal. It's not that important. Interdependency awareness is really having the entire team understand the importance of every single person's role in the impact scheme, right? So you literally can follow, if you played the mousetrap game as a kid, or if you know what a Rube Goldberg machine is, and if you're like, Chris, I don't know what either one of those is, the mousetrap game, you'd have a silver ball, and like with your buddies, you'd put together this big old crazy contraption of chutes and slides and wheels that would turn. And it's one of those, you'd put the silver ball, it would go down the slide, it would turn the crank, it would cause this little guy to like dive into a bucket that would then cause this other thing to come down and trap the mouse. Right, so the whole deal, right, the whole mechanism is meant to trap the mouse. That's their ultimate mission. That's what they're up to in the world. But bar none, right, the sexiest piece in the puzzle is that silver ball. And you would fight with your friends, like, who gets to put the silver ball that's going to go down through the crazy goodness? And it's one of those things where really pausing and having everyone get that silver ball is completely inconsequential and has absolutely no value without all the rest of the pieces. And if one of those pieces is like, meh, I don't really feel like showing up today, I'm not feeling it, you're not going to catch that mouse, right? Every single piece is mission critical to the whole, and the whole is mission critical to every single piece. And here's what I want to throw out there is that, once you can really talk this through with your team and you can actually talk about like, how does the work? How does it flow through our organization? You can talk about like, so if I'm in this role and this is my piece and there's the piece behind me, right? What, how can I make their lives? Well, let's see, the piece behind me, I'm actually going to make requests of, right? I'm going to say, hey, the way you could make my work a little bit easier is if you were able to adjust this and this, and then whoever's the piece that's in front of me, and it's not all linear, I know, but the piece that's in front of me that I impact, like what can I do to make their work a little bit easier? And again, having that clarity. The last piece within this that I want to share, and again, I've got a whole right presentation I can do around this one, but I think one of our biggest management challenges from a culture standpoint is when you have someone who is working for you, who maybe they've been doing a really good job for a really long time, and they have some kind of personal struggle that comes up and impacts their work, right? And you consider yourself a compassionate, empathetic person, and you're trying to figure out, like, gosh, how do I negotiate this with this person? Because I want to support them in their personal struggle, but like I need them from a work standpoint. And unfortunately, I learned this the hard way. So I had someone on my team. This is when I was running the moving company. They were my second in charge, and fantastic at what they did. And they started going through an Evel Knievel divorce. One of those where, man, right, you got the custody issues, like the whole nine yards, they're in court. And I was kind of like, you know what, man, you do you, you take care of you, you take care of your family, get it figured out, and I've got your back. And what I didn't realize, right, and here's someone who's actually high in leadership, but truth be told, he could have been anywhere in our organization. And if I had given him this, you know, carte blanche, like you do you, it's going to impact the entire system. It's going to impact the entire team, which is what started happening, right? Because he wasn't getting his work done. Not only was he starting to lose credibility with the team, but I was starting to lose credibility with the team as a leader because I wasn't holding him accountable. And finally, I got a clue, which is always delightful. And I sat down with him and I was like, listen, we need you. We count on you, right? If you don't do this piece, if you don't take care of this work and do this part of the role, here's the impact it has on everyone, right? And here's how this goes. And it's my fault that I didn't bring it to your attention sooner. And so help me figure out how do we make sure to get the work done and support you, right? And getting what you need on this personal struggle side. And what I can tell you, I was nervous at first because I was like, wow, I feel like I'm kind of hitting this guy while he's down. And it was fascinating. The next day he walked in with like, it was almost like this deflated balloon whose like self-esteem like filled up with air, right? Like he was filled back up because all of a sudden he's like, wow, I'm needed, I'm wanted, and my contribution matters. And so it's just something to really consider that your tendency, right? And it's funny because it starts looking like enablement, right? And that's one of those things where like compassion and empathy are beautiful, fantastic, I love them, and people have to get the work done. Right? So it is figuring out how to balance those things. And when you have that interdependency awareness, people get like, if I don't show up at 100%, here's the impact it's going to have. Okay. Number three, I want you to create a culture of open accountability. And there's a couple of things I want to share within this because I hear this all the time, like, oh my gosh, Chris, like we really struggle with a lack of accountability in our organization. Can you help us? And which I can, but one of the things that I always start with is a mindset shift. And that mindset shift starts with, if you think about the word accountability, we love this word and we struggle with this word. So if you were to look up on thesaurus.com, hold accountable, the very first thing that comes up is to place blame for wrongdoing. Just take that in for a second, right? The first thing that comes up around accountability is to place blame for wrongdoing, which is why when you go to your team and you say, we need more accountability, they don't tend to get super excited, right? Maybe if they're all about pointing fingers, right? Because they're like, yeah, we want to make sure that that guy whose fault it is like gets nailed to the wall, right? But there's this sense of getting nailed to the wall. Right, there's this sense it's you know, where people are watching you to see if you're doing it right or if you did it, like did you do what you said you were going to do? And there's this watching that's not witnessing. And so there's a huge difference there. When you're watching someone, right, you're watching to see really if they're going to do anything wrong. I mean, hopefully you'd be watching to see if they're doing things right. But truth be told, we're watching to see what's slipping through the cracks, what's not getting done. And so on the mindset shift, the first thing that I like to say is, like, let's talk about accountability. And ultimately, let's talk about it as being count-onable. Because that's what we mean, right? We're saying, I want to be able to count on you. I want to know that if you said you were going to do it, I can count on you to do it. I want to be able to count on you that if I throw it over the fence and you catch it and you say, I've got it, that you're going to run with it. And that if you have questions or you need help, that you're going to ask for it, right? I can count on you to show up on time. Like, I don't even have to think twice about that, right? Because you are count-onable and I'm count-onable. And it's a very different way of kind of thinking about that accountability factor. And within this, the reason why I have this picture of a gong is that, very interestingly, I was giving this tour of a company. It's called Neenan. It's an Arche construction company based out of Fort Collins, Colorado. And I was getting a tour, and when I first came in, they showed me how they ring the bell, right? If they get a really big sale, they ring the bell. And I was like, well, that's cool. And the employee that was showing me around finally took me to kind of their meeting room that they get together in twice a month. And there was a huge gong, like a huge gong in the meeting room. And I thought, well, that's odd. They have the bell. Like, what's the gong for? And I asked him, and he said, yeah, that's for when we screw up. I said, for when you screw up? And he's like, yeah, you know, whether it's with a vendor, it's with a coworker, it's with a client. You know, if you did something wrong, like, you get up in front of the team, you share what you did wrong, and then you hit the gong. I was like a confessional gong? And he's like, well, yeah, sort of. And I said, now, come on, when it's performance review time, are they like, I'm sorry, you've hit that confessional gong just one too few many times? And he's like, no, it never comes back to haunt us. And the beauty of this is that, right, the entire team gets to learn from this person's mistake. The entire team. And there's an openness around that. There's an openness of that we're human beings. We make mistakes. We have failures, right? And yet we can adjust. We can adapt. We can improve, right? Because there is the piece of, like, here's what I did and here's what I learned from it. And part of what makes this whole system work is that on occasion, right, the CEO gets up there and he hits the gong and is like, listen, you guys, I thought we should go down this strategy path. And I know a lot of you spent a lot of time and effort and thinking, and you know what? We're not going to go down that path anymore. And I know that's painful and I'm sorry, but, like, we have to be nimble and redirect, or whatever that looks like. But there's an ownership over that's allowed, right? There's an ownership that's allowed because there's that safety and being able to, you know, share those challenges. The other thing I want to share within the open accountability is, again, if you're in a leadership role or a management role and you're thinking about accountability and what does it mean to hold my people accountable and have them be count-onable, I want you to be thinking about witnessing their successes and witnessing their struggles, right? So when they go above and beyond, notice, appreciate, say something, say what it meant to you, speak to the impact. You don't have to give them a tchotchke or a gift card to make that meaningful. And then also notice when they're struggling, right? If someone's work is starting to go downhill, if someone's not getting things done right, right? You connect with them and say, hey, I've noticed as of late that you've made a few more mistakes. Like, what's going on? How can I support you? Do you need more training? Are you getting bored? Like, let's talk about this. Let's think this through. That's really what you want that to look like. You never want to look like where you're holding someone's feet to the fire. I mean, that's what's crazy, is that's the type of language that we use when talking about accountability, which is why I think a lot of organizations struggle with it. I'm going to share one more thing on this one. Let me just look at my time here. Yeah, I'll share this real quick. So the other thing about this open accountability is that ultimately you want to get where your entire team, so a team that is functioning well, that's a 7, that's good. Management is talking to someone about where they're struggling. right? Or like if you have someone on your team who's incredibly repetitive and takes up too much time in meetings, like that's actually getting addressed. If you have someone who's not carrying their weight, if you have someone who is gossiping, right, that gets addressed directly with the manager in a way that's kind, candid, and constructive. Really high functioning teams, the entire team is a stand for one another's success. And where there are those direct conversations that come from a place of caring. Because again, if you think about where gossip comes from talking about where other people are missing the mark, but not to them directly. And again, there's a whole nother piece about like how to communicate in Funky Town, what to say and how to say it. That I do training on with teams to kind of specifically address, like, how do you create that culture where people go to one another directly? Because I literally know of a company who fired a gentleman because he smelled, right? He had bad VO, he had bad breath, and to this day, that man does not know why he was fired. And it was because there was honestly what I call unkind niceness. No one wanted to hurt his feelings. Which again is just heartbreaking. Like, we'll fire you, but we don't want to hurt your feelings. And there's those kinds of things where truly, if his coworkers were even a stand for his success, someone would have been kind enough, right? And said like, dude, like I'm only bringing this to your attention because I care about you, but you might want to consider using a different deodorant. Or like, here's some breath mints. I would want someone to tell me if it was me. Like, makes me a little nervous telling you this, but I really am saying it because I care. Okay. Number four, I want you to come from a place of curiosity. And this is really coming from a place of wonderment. So if you can think for a moment, if someone on your team does something that you're like, what? Like, what were you thinking? You know, and we've had this, right? Our mothers at some point probably said to you, like, what were you thinking? And you were seven. And I'll tell you, you did not tell her what you were thinking. You told her how, like, your brother did it, or you told her, like, that wasn't you. What you did not tell her is what you were thinking. And here's the thing is that if you're in management or leadership, you genuinely want to understand, what were they thinking? Right? Where, like, maybe there was a piece that was missed in the orientation. Maybe there was a piece that was missed in the training. Maybe someone told them something that was incorrect. Maybe there's a piece of information that you don't have that once you, that's shared with you, you'll be like, oh, well, that makes sense. Of course you would change direction and do something different, right? So coming from this place of wonderment. So when you find yourself in that, like, say what? Like, pause and be like, okay, you know, bring it back in. What if I was to come from a place of curiosity? Because it really is about tone and approach and energy and how you're showing up. So that person doesn't go on the defensive and doesn't shut down, but genuinely gives you like, here's what I was thinking. The other piece within this, I'm going to give you a real quick tip on, you know, that known piece where where you genuinely know your people. Again, you're in management, you're in leadership, you're running a mile a minute. And, you know, you say good morning to your staff. You ask them how they are. They tell you like their social pat response of fine, good, another day in paradise. You check that off the list that you checked in with everyone and you move on. And here's the thing that I want you to change is that instead of asking anyone on your team, how are you or how are you doing, in which you get that pat response and you have no more information than where you started, I want you to use what I call the temperature check. And that is when you say, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you doing today? And here's the deal is that the first time they give you an answer, just note it and then ask them. The second question is more important, which is, well, what would make that a +1? Right? So you genuinely learn something that would improve. And they might say, you know, it would make it a +1 if my cat would just like stop causing havoc in the middle of the night. Right? And so you just learn something about that person you didn't know before. They're struggling from sleep because of their cat. Right? It's nothing that you actually have to do, but you can then have compassion and check in a week, be like, how's your cat? You know, are you sleeping better? You know, or whatever that looks like. And you create that connection. The other thing is that, let's say 2 weeks later, you say, hey, on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you doing today? And if before they were a 5 and today they're a 7, you're like, sweet, high five. Like, what happened between then and now that things are better? And if they come back and they say, oh, I'm a 3, then you're like, oh, like, what happened? Let's set aside some time this afternoon to sit down. I want to see what I can do to support you, if anything. So come from a place of wonderment, place of curiosity, and try on that temperature check. Number five, I really want you to connect the money and the mission. So one of the things, the reason why that mission is so critical, we talk about money in our businesses all the time. We talk about the amount of money we want to make, the amount of money we want to save. We talk about how much stuff costs. We talk about, right, we're talking about it all the time, but we rarely connect that money to the mission. So money, right, and just, and you also have to know there's a lot of employees depending on their backgrounds, their life experiences, right? When you say we want more money, we want to grow our revenue, part of them is wondering why, like, why do we need more money? I'm already working really hard. Why do we have to grow? What does that get us? And they might just go straight to like, oh, well, because the bosses are greedy. That's why they just want to fill their pockets more. So this is so key, right? So from a money standpoint, you want people to really get money is energy. That's all it is. And it's energy to water the things that you want to grow. And it's one of those things that the more money you have, the more you can focus on growing your mission and the more people you can impact with your mission. And the more your mission grows, the more money you have, right? So big money equals big impact equals big money. And having people really understand the importance of that mission, and you can say the reason we want to grow our revenues, the reason we want to grow this money is because we want to impact and support and help and do whatever it is that we're up to in the world even more. And it's literally, I think of it as an infinity symbol where you've got money on one side, you've got mission on the other, and they literally feed each other. Because if you've ever been in an organization that is struggling financially, you do not get to focus on the mission. You don't, right? You're focusing on all these other things that are peripheral, and the mission starts getting starved. You start cutting corners in ways that you would never, ever cut. Ethics start getting compromised in a way that they would never, ever get compromised if you had that money in place, right? So it's one of those things you really want to be present to that. And there's something, I don't think I have it. Oh, I think it might be in one of our culture tips, and it's also in my book. But there's what I call the $100 tool that's incredibly powerful for sharing with your team. And again, I shared it with my crew guys, right? A lot of them, you know, didn't have GEDs or like didn't have a great education, but having them really understand how your organization makes, saves, and spends money and how they can participate in helping you make and save money, right? And like where they can impact things and where they can't. And that helps create that sense of inclusion and belonging, like they're part of that inner circle. If we end up having time, I can go through that. But I wanna make sure we get through these last two and that I've got time for questions for you all. All right, number six, I want you to boost camaraderie, right? So if you do have, right, let's say your sales department and your ops department, they don't get along, or you've got old school and new school, or you've got the millennials and the boomers, or you've got, right, like the leadership and the staff, and you've got these like separations. One of the things that you want to do is you really want to speak to what is our common ground? Like, what is it that we all have in common? Because a lot of times we focus on these disunifying factors. And again, I could go into this a lot deeper, but one of the easiest ways to help people kind of connect that are disjointed, that are disconnected, that have separated, that said, they're not my peeps, which by the way, if you're in a company, like we're all on the same team, we're in the same jersey, and of all the millions of places that we could all possibly choose to work, we all chose to work at this place at this time with this team. And if that's not common ground, like I don't know what is, but there's additional pieces that you can do to support that camaraderie and kind of that social super glue. And here's just a real simple exercise that I want to give you. And I think, again, in my book, I've got like 15, but here's one, and it's called Rosebud Thorn. It's not my idea. I don't know where the idea came from. My daughter introduced it to me, but I've searched for who the original author of this concept is. But basically, if you think you've got a meeting, it's the beginning of the meeting, rather than talking about how was your weekend, which there's value in that, but try this instead. Do a round robin, 1 minute, Rosebud Thorn for every single person. So rose is what is the thing that you're most excited about right now? What's going really, really well right now? Bud is what is the thing you're most looking forward to, right? And then thorn is your biggest challenge. You can do this professionally. You can do this personally. Again, rose, the thing you're most excited about right now. Bud is what's the thing you're most looking forward to. And then thorn is what is your biggest challenge. And it is surprising the depth that you can get in 1 minute with each person covering those three items. So try it on at your next meeting. There's a lot, right? Like, sure, if you can do a half-day team building retreat, good on ya. But there's a lot of organizations that are feeling really pressured for time and feel like, gosh, we can't do that. And again, these are a bunch of short, beautiful ways to connect in a deeper way. Number seven, speaking of time, I want you to expand time. And what I mean by this is that right now, I would suggest that we're in kind of a social epidemic of what I would call time poverty, in which people within tons of organizations will tell you that they're too busy, they don't have enough time, they've got a zillion things to do, they're overwhelmed. And if your team is in overwhelm, they're not going to take the time to get to know one another deeply. They're not, that sense of mattering is caught in I'm busy being busy, not necessarily effective, right? I'm so busy being busy. It's like, okay, but that doesn't necessarily get us the results and the outcomes that we want. And included, because in order to feel included, and again, to really know one another, you have to be able to be fully present. Well, you're in that constant state of overwhelm, you're not going to be fully present. And so there's a piece where you have to shift your team's mindset around time and possibly your own. So you're like, oh my gosh, Chris, I say those things all the time. I talk about like how busy I am. Know that your team is a reflection of you. And this time poverty is the ultimate scapegoat that I see of so many teams for why they don't execute and implement and get the things done that they said they were going to get done, right? Because it's one of those where if I come to you and say, oh, I'm sorry, boss, I didn't get that done. I've just been so busy. If that is the story of our team, you're going to accept it. You're going to be like, oh yeah, I know what you mean. I am too, right? Rather than, so here's the thing, right? To shift that with your team, the very first thing you want to shift it with yourself if it's a challenge. But here's the thing, and this is my own alligator that I wrestle on a regular basis, just so y'all know. But here's the thing, right? Like, you are not a victim of time, right? We all have 24 hours in a day, 7 days a week. Like, it is the one grand equalizer across all of humanity. And how we choose to use that time is our own, right? We have absolute choice in how that time is used. And again, I've got a bunch of ways around how you can expand time, right? We all hear time management practices, and those are good. Those are fantastic. However, if you don't first shift, like you are not bullied by time. I think sometimes we even feel like we're bullied by time. It's not true, right? We have absolute choice in the matter. So that's the first place to start. Now here's, before I kind of get into this, but what about, I want to just end this real quick and then jump into questions. And that is, I talked about the financial return on investment of happy employees. I want to speak to the emotional return on investment as well. And there was a woman who, I told her how in our culture audit, we literally measure, do your employees feel good about coming to work? And she looked at me, she got real wide-eyed and kind of shocked. And I asked her, I was like, where's that coming from? And she goes, well, Chris, that's really interesting that that's what you measure. Because she said at my last place of work, there were literally days I'd be driving to the office and I'd rather get in an accident than arrive to work. Right? And that's just not an option. That's just not okay. And again, you want to create an empowering context where your people feel good most days, right, about coming to work. Because when your people feel good about coming to work, they show up at home as better parents, better spouses, and better citizens. There's just a huge ripple effect. I mean, again, just think about when you had a really grumpy day at work, and you show at home with your kids, like, how are you? You're impatient, you're short, you don't want to deal, you want to numb with Netflix, as compared to if you've had a great day at work. And of course, it's fine to have one bad day at work. It happens. It's normal. But not every day. Every day cannot feel like a soul-sucking experience. It just can't. So I'm going to end there so that we have time for questions. I do want to offer up, here's some other topics that you might be like, but Chris, what about this? Like, how do we do this? How do we do that? And I just want to offer that to find out more about those sorts of things. One, we have our free weekly company culture tip. Please consider reading and implementing Culture Works. We have both a book and a workbook. We have a bunch of teams that are buying the bundle where their entire leadership or management team has the book and the workbook, and they're working through it and signing up for our book club in January. You can reach out to me directly if you want to know more about our company culture audit. And then if you want to hear more and get more tips and goodness about how to improve your workplace culture, I could speak at your next industry conference. So with no further ado, because I know we're near time, I do want to ask what questions you all have. And so I know, Vania, you're going to help me know what questions that came up in the course of our time together.
Yeah, absolutely. We do have a couple of questions here. If anybody wants to ask Chris a question, just submit it using the Q&A function on the bottom or just type it into the chat window. This first one's from Marcelo. How do you approach your boss or someone in the leadership team to explore and implement all seven steps? I recently resigned a leadership position due to a bad non-existent culture. So now I am in a new company, not in a leadership position yet, but I have the chance to be a director again. Therefore, I want to start planting the seed on having the right culture prior to me taking the role as a leader again.
So Marcelo, you're in a very different position this time than you were last time, obviously, which you just spoke to. And I think one of the things, because you are new, right, there's a piece where, right, it's going to be really important to the leadership team there that they feel like you understand the current culture before you try to go changing it. But I think you can start dropping seeds on, like, I really care about having an extraordinary workplace culture, both for myself, for my coworkers, for the leadership team, because I know we could just be that much more successful. One of the things I think that you are asking and that I do want to speak to is I do have people who say, what happens if I feel like my boss is the problem, right? I feel like part of our culture issues really are stemming from my boss or leadership. Like, what am I supposed to do with that other than just leave? And again, maybe you already did this, Marcelo, maybe you didn't. But one of the things I always like to offer up is I think one of the stereotypes that we're up against within organizations is between leadership and staff, and where we think of bosses, we think of authority, right? If you think about Dilbert on, you think about the boss on Dilbert, the pointy-haired boss on Dilbert, you think about Mr. Burns on The Simpsons, you think about Steve Carell on The Office, like we're actually taught that bosses are mean, they're greedy, and they're clueless. And because of that, we're scared to approach them. And the truth of the matter is, they're really just human beings like the rest of us trying to do the best they can do with the information they have. And so it's one of those where if you are a frontline staff employee and you want to see the culture change, but you think leadership is clueless, not aware, you might even think they don't care, which is probably not true, but it might seem like that. If you were to go to them and say, it's because I care so much about this organization and what we're up to in the world, like I'm concerned about some of the things that I see. And I'm wondering if I can bring some things to your attention on what it is that I think that we could do to improve our workplace culture, right? And it's being brave, it's having courage and coming from that place, again, not of judgment, right? But from curiosity and not coming from assumptions, but coming from caring and saying, like, I really would like to be a part of making this place extraordinary, where people really feel good about coming to work. And Marcelo, I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, run with it, like go make it happen. And here's what you want to do. You'd be like, cool. And I have to know that we're all bought in, right? Because if we start unearthing some things, there might be some things that are uncomfortable and I'm willing to stay and stand in that space and fight the good fight. But I need to have you guys with me in that effort. Like I can't do this on my own. Like it's going to take, and it really doesn't just take leadership. They have to be bought in and supporting it, but it's going to take the entire team.
Sure. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah.
This next one is from Ralph. Please comment again on your take on the differences between employee engagement and employee happiness, just as one can be happy but not engaged or vice versa.
Good question. So the employee engagement, so what I've noticed about engagement, there's a lot of different definitions around it. There's some people who would say it does include happiness. There's some people who say that it wouldn't. And so I'm not fighting against engagement. I'm not saying engagement is wrong by any stretch of the imagination. I think the intention around engagement is really positive. I just think it's a word that doesn't land, right? It's a word that doesn't have a visceral sense of what does that really mean? What does that look like? How do I know when people are engaged versus not engaged? Also, why would, right? Like, and you might, well, Chris, they're bored, or like, that's how I know if they're not engaged. It's like, okay, well, great, address the boredom. But then there's a piece of like, well, why are they bored, right? Where is that coming from? Is it that they haven't, right? They don't feel like they're getting recognized for the work they're doing. So they kind of think like, well, it doesn't really matter if I go above or beyond or not. Like, maybe it's actually more around appreciation. But the happiness thing for me, again, when there is joy, when there is genuine emotional health and joy within an organization, emotional health doesn't just equal joy, but you can feel it energetically. Engagement is harder. It's harder to put your finger on. And it's one of those things where happiness includes engagement. I don't know that engagement includes happiness.
Thanks. That is great. I just have one more question here for you, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
It is from Barry. I work in an environment where my department has to work 12-hour shifts 6 days a week, and I know my team is unhappy with the lack of work-life balance. I'm the supervisor and have tried changing the schedule so they would have off 2 days a week every other week. But then the plant manager changes it. They won't let me hire more help either. Any tips for selling the higher-ups on making changes to make my employees happy and less stressed?
Let me ask one follow-up question. Do you have high turnover? And I don't know, are you able to see a response quickly?
Not sure.
Okay. If I had to guess, you might have high turnover. I would suggest that in those 12 hours, there's no way you're getting full effectiveness. The intensity of that kind of workload, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, ongoing, there's just no way from a, I don't think, and again, feel free, someone's welcome to prove me wrong, but from a productivity standpoint, you start to hit burnout. And so you start, right, and I imagine you're paying overtime then. So for the hours that you're paying the most for, you're getting the least work out of. And it's a little bit of a wonderment of why they're not looking at like some different shift considerations. But I would share with them the return on investment of happy employees document that again is on our website and be like, listen, this is not just out of love for my guys, which by the way, that's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. But it also has to do with supporting the financial health of our organization and burning our people into the ground. And if you do have high turnover, it's actually an even easier argument. And I highly doubt that they're like, is it easy to recruit people for you guys? Is it hard to find people? You know, are the guys that are working for you in the plant, I mean, are they telling their friends to come and work there? Or like, no way, because there is no work-life balance. But I think there's a piece of like, we don't want to just churn and burn through people. Like, we genuinely care about these people and we want them to care about our organization. There's no way that can happen unless they feel like we're genuinely committed to them having lives that they love, which is not going to look like 12 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Sure. Thank you. That was a good answer. I agree. That's a little ridiculous. But anyway, thank you, Chris, so much for this webinar. It was amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Vania. I really appreciate it. And if you want to, if you have any follow-up questions, again, would love to talk with you further. Thank you so much for your time.
Yep, thanks, everyone. Remember, you can get this recording and all our past webinar recordings by signing up for a LeadX Academy membership. We offer a free 3-day trial. Go to leadx.org to learn more.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, L-E-A-D-X.O-R-G, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?